then you need to be a surgical sniper to be able to jump through that gap.
That is someone who shoots constructively
scalpels
the organs off of people's body.
With scalpel. Yeah. Like with a scalpel appendix gun.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody's appendix is bursting, you're 300 yards away. You can't get there in time.
Scotch.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 142 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast of Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth, and I'm the games programmer.
I'm Adam, and I try to fix broken, stupid, idiot websites.
I'm Sam, and I like dogs.
I like dogs.
And this is a show where we talk about life, business, and working in the games industry. Today is March 19th, 2018. Now, before we get started, I have something important to say.
What's that?
Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Anything can happen on this show. There will be profanity. There's going to be lewdness. And we're going to talk about adult themes. So if you're a child, then go ahead and leave. All right. News from this past week. First of all, Adam has been murdering scores of workers.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Let's talk about it.
I've been working on my deployment pipeline, which sounds real fancy, for the new website for Rumpus, for all the stuff that we're building on the website. And with the end goal of making it so that all I have to do is just type a few things, just like while I'm programming, just type a few things, and then I just sit there and wait. And then an army of robots off in the distance
stampedes across the landscape.
Yeah, and respawns everything. Like rebuilds the website. They adjust their numbers to match the amount of traffic on our web server and all that kind of stuff.
So this is all part of Adam's efforts to become the prime robomancer.
Correct. Yes.
Of the earth.
Yeah. So that's been going really well. And I finally, everything has gotten to a good enough point in preparation for Levelhead, the game we're working on right now, and for all the web stuff we're going to do with it, that we're just getting so close to being able to beta test this thing.
Yep.
And that's also true for all the Rumpus stuff, all the web tech. We're just getting so close to being technically able to do it. And in fact, on the website, we could just do it now in terms of The tech is ready,
yeah,
but it is not deployed yet, because to just deploy a website these days, it used to be you would go buy a computer, you put it in your basement in the corner and plug it into the internet and then fight your ISP because, they're always...
To the death
because they're always throttling.
And now you're the ISP.
Now you just let Amazon do that fight, or whoever, some other cloud service.
Well, the basic problem with web programming is that you build whatever you're building on your machine, and then you have to get it.
And you got to get it.
Deployment is just getting it from the machine onto the damn internet.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And of course, the internet's not the same as your machine. And so then there's all these things you have to deal with, all this bullshit.
The internet
you have to worry
is
about.
The tubes.
The internet's just the tubes
that go between the machines.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, what a lot of people don't know is that MMA, like the Ultimate Fighting, is actually Amazon and ISPs sending their champions to duke it out.
They're fighting through avatars.
Yeah.
It's just like Game of Thrones.
People don't realize that that's. Mm-hmm. That's how that whole thing works. Yep.
I kind of wish we solved some disputes in some sort of
by choosing champions.
Yeah. The old school way,
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the problem with solving things that way is that the winner is completely irrelevant to the problem at hand, right?
Yep.
Like, did you murder this person? I did, but I don't want to go to jail.
But I have this friend who's 7 feet tall.
I have a friend. I have a 7 foot tall friend. So now I just don't get to go to jail now?
Yep.
Is that how that?
Yeah, now you're just not in trouble. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is amazing the kinds of things we used to do to solve problems.
Mm-hmm.
Solve, quote unquote.
I mean, we still problems. Do. We still have wars and stuff.
Kind of like somebody's,
and we still have a fucked up legal system that can't do anything right. So,
that's true.
So it just turns out we just suck. Yeah. Just as a
we are gradually becoming less murdery over time in our problem solving.
Mm-hmm.
It's still very murdery though.
Yeah.
Very
well, speaking
murdery.
Of murdery, so the metaphor that Adam uses in code, I believe, for all these robots is workers.
Yeah.
And so we've talked a lot about the power of metaphors and choosing the right one for your tech or whatever you're working on so that you can essentially get a little mental assistance with how to frame thinking about the problem. And Adam's just been, I guess you have functions that are just about workers retiring
and dying, and
which
kills
them oftentimes.
Yeah, and so workers is a sort of a general computer science concept. It usually means spawning sort of an additional piece of software that's kind of just off doing a job, and so that's how I'm running stuff, trying to take advantage of the hardware to the max. So I'm just spawning all these workers across it, but just like in real life, workers, they get old, Their mental faculties start to go. They just can't. And
or you know, they hit that point on their retirement account where they're like, you know, it's time for me to punch out. I did my job.
I did it.
Yep. And so whether they've gone senile or whether it's just time to retire, you know, just sometimes you gotta
whatever they're doing is not relevant anymore.
Yeah, you gotta let the old ones out and let the fresh blood come in. You know, this is also good for the economy. So.
Get new workers in.
Yeah, so I have the retirement or the workers retirement program in my code base. That just every time a new worker is born and brought into, and of course it's capitalism, so you're brought into the workforce the moment you're born.
Just instantly
you're born. So you come in and then in this sort of godlike fashion, the boss of all of these workers, because again, capitalism, so bosses are God, right?
Right.
It just assigns to the worker a retirement date. The moment it's born, it just says this is how long you get to be around.
This is what happens to judges in India. I know
that's true.
Government employees in India have a forced retirement date.
Yep. Cool. Yeah. So once the moment you turn
62 or something,
you're done.
That's it. You just don't get to do it anymore.
Yeah. So then the boss is you know watching these workers and it's just counting down this timer. You know, and the moment it's now time for a worker to go on its merry way, it then sends a signal and just says, "Hey, buddy, it's just time for you to let somebody else step up to the plate.
Hey, buddy, get out."
Yeah, but also workers die sometimes.
But doesn't the worker kill itself at that point?
I mean, it does sort of.
Well, it first,
is capitalism. There's nowhere for you to go once you're not part of the workforce. Mm-hmm.
But it also, did you say it does? It resolves its current connections.
Yeah, yeah. It takes care of all of its business first.
It gets its affairs in order.
It gets its affairs in order, and then just. Goes away.
What a useful metaphor.
So I mean, if you want it to be more humane, you can also. I mean, these are demons that you're summoning. Because the thing about demons is they never die. Mm-hmm, their physical form is destroyed, and their soul returns to the twisting nether, as we all know.
Yep.
And then they can be re-manifested into a new physical form.
Yes.
You know. So it's sort of a reincarnation.
So it's not like they're gone forever. They're just
just hanging out for a while.
They'll be back. Yeah, they're reincarnated in the body of a younger worker.
Yeah, mm-hmm. a more younger, more capable. Yeah,
but I do want to. This is a
serene.
This is an appropriate time to say though that there's this fucked up thing in computer science. And remember, computer science is old, and by old I mean most of the ideas that are kind of core to it are from the 70s. Mm. So I mean, old is in like the
culturally
in the high time of horrible racism, right? So. There's a computer science relationship between things. It could be hardware, it can be pieces of software, whatever. That's just called the master-slave relationship.
Mm. I remember learning this when I was learning how to build computers.
Yeah,
and they were like, if you have two hard drives, then you have to choose which one's the master and which one's the slave.
Yeah.
And you put a little jumper on there to determine that.
You couldn't choose.
This is not comfortable.
Maybe a less charged
something less horrible
metaphor.
Yeah. So it's just really fucked up. Yeah. And the first time I saw that, I was like, I don't want to say this out loud. I don't want to say like,
why not the superhero and the sidekick, you know?
Well, that's why for my stuff, anywhere I can just choose what I call things, mm-hmm. I just call them bosses and workers, even if it goes against the normal concept of what a worker is in computer science. Cause
who cares? Cause
who gives a shit? You should, as long as you can understand the metaphor so that you can use the thing appropriately, mm-hmm. then, you know, maybe let's not.
Yeah. Literally the only thing that it needs to determine or that it needs to convey is that one actor is making decisions and the other is not.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. But that's basically it.
It doesn't have to be, the metaphor doesn't have to be one of the grossest
possible
human things that we have ever done to each other.
That is true. So you don't have to do that.
Yeah. So any of you out there doing computer science stuff, if you're going to teach this relationship, if you're a teacher and you're teaching this relationship to students or whatever, just acknowledge that it's real fucked up. And tell people, hey, when you're using this stuff, because I actually use aliases for things even too. So if I'm using other people's software or if I'm using core things of like of Node or whatever my program language is, they'll have functions that are just called that. It'll be like the function is slave, is master, whatever. Mm. I just alias them.
You're like, I'm not fucking with this.
I'm not going to use that. So I'm just like, so that now equals is boss or is worker, right? And anyway, of course, it's still a little gross because now we're talking about capitalism and, you know, this asymmetrical relationship.
You're saying that workers don't make decisions.
Exactly. But it's way less gross.
That's fair.
It is.
Way less
gross. I wish, so vector artwork has one of the weirdest metaphors, I think. I don't even think it counts, frankly. It just seems like a random word choice because your lines become paths.
Yeah.
And then steps along a path are called nodes. Mm-hmm. It seems like it should be called like stones, perhaps, if you're going to go with the path metaphor.
Yeah, they kind of didn't take it all the way to the max.
And so it just ends up being this random collection of words that actually, when you first start doing vector, you're like, what?
Right, how do these fit together?
Like, you call them waypoints, you could call them stones, you call them anything like that if you were going with the path metaphor, but
you'd call them teleporters.
Teleporters, you know, if you want.
Mm-hmm. Way stations.
Mm-hmm. And then they just call, if you draw a circle, and anything that has properties attached to it by default that isn't a path.
It's an object.
Is an object. Right. But that is also
called a primitive.
Also called a primitive. Yep. But mainly they call them objects, which is also very confusing because coming again from just a normal person's place, most things are objects. Yeah. It doesn't help you.
Literally everything.
But then also comparing that to computer science. Object exactly. Kind of means something else there too, but they're actually related. You
well,
know?
And in GameMaker, object, it is a programming term in GameMaker, but it means something completely different than what all other programming languages mean. Mm-hmm. So, you know, words are hard.
Yep, choose your metaphors. Words are kind of important.
Don't be an asshole about it.
So I've been reading a book from 1996 called The End of Education by Neil Postman, who's whether you agree with stuff he says or not, he's an interesting fellow who he's good at making his points in a pretty sort of sassy kind of a way.
Is this kind of an anti-fragile situation?
It's not an ego thing. I think it's just...
he just doesn't give a shit anymore. It's kind of like, how it is.
Yeah, he's got some valid opinions and some interesting points. And he's also not afraid to kind of address topics that people are generally less willing to talk about, but he's very sort of colloquial and, you know, you can tell like his intentions are not bad or anything. Right. So even if you're like, I don't necessarily agree, but okay, you get a pass. Right? he had this interesting phrase where he was talking about the power of language and how, the point of this book, of the book, The End of Education, is he's just kind of exploring what is the purpose of education and why do people learn and stuff. And he was addressing questions about why do people not really care about language? You know, you'll often see the people make the comment like, well, I don't use proper grammar on the internet because who cares? Because it's just the internet, right? As if somehow they know how to use proper grammar
and
will do.
That's an explanation.
Right, as if somehow that means something. But he said, you know, one of his teachers said when he was in fifth grade that language is a gift from God and it separates us from everything else. And it's the thing that makes us human. And so he was kind of exploring what that means and brought up the interesting point that we create language, basically humans create tools and the tools that we create shape us in return, right? So by using a tool, it changes the way we think about the world and language is just a tool for communication. Mm-hmm. And so the words that you choose to use for things will completely change your perspective and framing about what those things are and what they mean and how you should feel about them.
Right.
So if you do find incredibly gross language sprinkled throughout your speech, maybe don't.
Maybe just
or if you find a place where you have a super confusing metaphor that's not assisting your actual understanding of something. I mean, we've had this with projects where there was one, I think it was when we were working on Rumpus stuff.
We've had a few major rename overhauls.
Yeah, where we had to come up the sack concept.
Yes.
Basically, had to come up with what is a good metaphor for a thing that you can just put anything into and get anything out of.
Yep.
And maybe destroy it. It's not like super valuable, but, you know, kind of just a grab bag.
Because Rumpus is essentially, it's just a very robust storage mechanism. That's kind of at the core of it. Which that Rumpus is our web backend.
Well, it's that plus a permissions and access.
Right.
Those are sort of the two components of it.
And so one of the core storage components we have is something called a crate, which is a very well-defined.
It used to be called a container.
Yes, which is a little too vague.
Which was too vague and also confusing because I use everything in Docker and Docker also uses containers.
Language, right? Yeah. Yep. So a crate implies it's very solid. It has a predefined shape, you know, so it just is what it is. And it also implies that there may be some level of sort of restrictive access to it because you can't just open any crate. Like sometimes you need a crowbar, like you need some way to get into it.
Might have a padlock on it. But also it might just be open. Who knows? Yeah.
So for example, in Levelhead, which is the game that we're currently working on, when we store players' levels online, we use this crate system. So basically you publish a level and that level goes into a crate that has a certain access level that says...
Yeah, so basically says, anybody who is a Rumpus user can download this.
Yeah, so it's a, sort of a publicly accessible crate.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But interestingly, it also has permissions on the other end where you put something in there and you can never touch it again.
Mm-hmm.
You can only download it. You can put stuff in there, right? So that makes sense to use the term crate for that. And then when it came to stuff like, what about storing somebody's high score on any given level? Well, somebody might play 1,000 levels.
Yep.
And they may set a high score and then not look at that high score again for 6 months.
And then set it again.
Right? Mm-hmm. And so... is this sort of infrequently updated information that is mostly irrelevant. So think about...
And you only need to fetch one of them. So you're not getting a box of crap, you know? Yeah. You're not getting a crate full of stuff. You're just getting like a single thing.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of similar to somebody who sent out a tweet 3 years ago. You know, that tweet is very old.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. It's not relevant. And that person and probably no other people are going to look at that tweet for a long time, sure. Right? So it's just... So what was the term we ended up using? Junk.
Yeah.
It's junk, mm-hmm. Right?
Well, it's piles of junk.
It's piles of junk.
Yep. Because the pile kind of loosely describes what's in there, but very loosely because it's just a pile. You know, you don't worry about that too much.
And anything you put in there just goes on top of the pile.
Yeah, it just goes in the pile. Like you can,
so the longer
you know,
something's been in the pile, the further down it is.
Yeah, right. And if you know exactly what you're looking for, it's actually not too hard to get it out of the pile because you just kind of flip through there until you find mm-hmm. something that looks exactly like what you want. But if you don't know what you're looking for, then you're not going to find something.
Right.
You know, you got to go in there looking for a specific thing. But also, right. Just like junk piles, you know, those should be tidied up every once in a while. You know, yeah. if you got junk in there that's really old, you should throw it away.
You don't want too much junk in your metaphorical trunk.
Yeah. Right? So the junk pile it has self-killing junk.
Yeah. So you can just be like, this junk gets to live for a week.
Yeah. Any junk that's in this pile that's a week old, get it out of here.
Yep.
Right. Let's keep the pile small.
Yeah.
Right?
But yeah, but we've struggled over the way to name this thing mm-hmm. so that the metaphor of the naming would match the functionality in a clear enough way that when say Seth or Sam were sitting down to think about some design concept in Levelhead and said, okay, how could we implement this with the tools we have? Because I don't want to have to build every time they have an idea, I'm not gonna build a entirely new system for Rumpus mm-hmm. because that takes me weeks to do.
Yeah.
And they have ideas every second, right?
That's true.
I need to be able to make something generic that has a metaphorically clear enough terminology that they can then just go use the thing mm-hmm. and just be like, okay, I can see how this fits, how what I want to do either does or can be made to fit inside mm-hmm. of the functionality that we have.
Yeah, it reduces a lot of design overhead, I think.
A lot.
It actually sort of opens up opportunities because then you say, hell, can we use a crate for this?
Should I put this in a crate or is this more of a junk?
More of a piece of junk, I think.
Yeah. Or should this go into a ledger? Because that's another
thing.
System, which again, it's and they're all designed to meet sort of general, but also sort of constrained kinds of needs,
mm-hmm. different use cases.
Actually, yeah. in the case of Levelhead and this idea of metaphors, so we did a huge pass on the UI this week. So the game actually looks like it's done, which is
it's
pretty
all the looking.
It looks pretty rad.
Sharp.
And we did this in the last week because up until this point, of course, we've been building a bunch of systems and also, you know, getting content in there. And then before GDC, we wanted to have a build that actually looks good. And the problem is that if your UI looks like garbage.
All the UI was placeholder.
Yeah.
All of it.
But placeholders is in Seth's like 30-second pixel art using GameMaker.
Either I use pixel art or I just draw rectangles using code.
Yeah. So I got in there and knocked around and then Seth implemented everything. And the game, basically one of the things we talked about was we don't want the levels to feel just like a line item in a big scrollable list, right?
Yeah. Every because level should feel special.
It should feel worth exploring.
Yeah, and it should have a level of physicality to it because, you know, you take a lot of, it's not like a tweet where you might like take 30 seconds to write this thing. You're probably going to spend like somewhere between 15 and 45 minutes to an hour building a level, you know, testing it and have fun with it. And then you have to put it up. And so if we take all that energy you put into it and then just give you a shitty looking line of text.
Yeah,
then
what a bummer,
kind of is a bummer, right?
Yeah.
So what we decided to do was actually, again, give the cards a level of, or give the levels a degree of physicality. So
nice. I saw that word struck.
Yeah. So
again, words.
So to do that, what we've done is actually sort of package them up into what looks like a little card, almost like a cartridge thing. And so when you publish your level, instead of just hitting like, you know, publish, which who even knows what the fuck that means, you hit ship it because again, this is a Bureau of Shipping game. It's mm-hmm. about this sort of tying it into the narrative overall. And you're going to ship your level and then it'll kind of smash together all the pieces into this cool looking physical card, ship it off to the community. And then when you go look at the community pages, you actually see these rows, essentially these big stacks of all these different cards on them.
I had an idea of the animation for when you ship your level is we'll summon the card onto the screen. I will quickly take inventory of all the different things in the level.
Oh, yeah.
And then they're going to fucking swirl around like a tornado. Yeah. So all the different blocks and enemies
just
and stuff.
Pile in there.
And they'll just swirl in and then they'll suck into, the, goes, into the level.
Yeah. Yeah. And then
it's going to be
amazing. So, and it's not in there yet, but we have, you know.
Yeah, because I just thought of it right now. So.
but that's one of those juice pieces that in the case of building a product, building a game, you know, we want the game to have a particular feel to it. And also we want people to care about their levels. And if you do things that is, as a designer, whether it's the word choice you use or the way you lay out the UI that makes it so that it feels like this isn't actually important to someone or like it doesn't have any heft, then people aren't going to value it.
Yeah. All, and I think there's one other thing that we probably should do is each level should be kind of like a Tamagotchi pet, you know, and you have to clean up its poop. Otherwise it'll die. Yeah. So that way we want to make sure.
That way we can expire old content.
Right. That way if people stop caring about their levels, then we can stop caring about.
But
their
what
levels.
If, what if they continue to feed it, but don't clean up its poop?
Then it'll die.
Okay.
Cause just, in
sewage overflow.
Yeah. Cause in Tamagotchi, if the entire screen gets covered with poop, then the Tamagotchi dies.
Can the whole screen get covered in poop?
Yeah, it's like a grid. So it just like it goes across in rows, I think. And then eventually your
Tamagotchi. That reminds me, there was Tamagotchi a game. I think, is it Pixel Piracy? Is that the one? It might be something else. But there's a game. It's a pixel graphics based game where you're basically a pirate managing a ship. And so you sail around and it's a management game, right? So you hire crew and this stuff. But it's the kind of this weird, cute style. One of the main things you have to contend with is just your pirates poop on just they poop on the boat, right? Well, yeah. And so yeah. So all of your
where
pirates
else poop?
Yeah, all your pirates have a skill set. So some of them you can assign them to then do things, right? So some of them are good at cleaning and you can live up their cleaning. And so you need enough people who can clean. And basically, what they do. It's like a little poop pile suddenly appears. Like somebody makes a farting noise and it appears, right? and then your cleaning characters will then run up and punt it off of the side of the boat. But it was a hilarious. I had a lot of fun that game for a while.
So cleaning is. Yeah.
But it was hilarious
it's just
because
kicking shit off. Of
yeah, because like it became a key problem in management of your ship is making sure you had enough people cleaning that stuff up.
Mm.
I don't know why that's a common thing in games.
I love the efficiency of that though, because like on the game making side, you could make an animation where someone goes up and like scrubs it.
Yep.
You know, but just make it way more funny just by having to punt literally this sack of shit.
It's sort of like it was like what we did with Crashlands, where all that Flux can do is swing, and then we had stuff like a blowgun. Right. And so we didn't say shit. How do we animate a blowgun now that
we
can
did.
Swing?
Or and we said like, that we originally. Can't do that.
Yeah. Right.
Well, we can't. We just don't care enough to.
Right. Yeah. So we still want the blowgun. And so instead, she just swings the blowgun.
It's as if you put a dart in the blowgun and then swung it and used the.
Which would work.
It would work.
Yeah.
If the dart was in there kind of loose enough. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, because the principles of a blowgun is the dart needs to form a really good seal for the pressure.
And here it needs to not.
For a throw gun, it needs to be a little loose in there. It's kind of like those curved things that have a ball in them and you can flip them out, you know?
What
are those called? I don't know.
No idea.
It's called a ball flippy curly thing.
Ball flippy curly thing. For kids!
Yeah.
Oh, do you have on your list of stuff that we are going to be at GDC when this podcast airs?
Yes, we will be at GDC when this podcast airs.
Okay, because we mentioned that a little bit and talking about
we are leaving. GDC. This is on Saturday. We're recording this. We're leaving tomorrow.
Yep.
We'll be in San Francisco tomorrow night, and then we will be GDCing for the rest of the week.
Yeah. And if the plane goes down, we'll survive.
That's the end of Butterscotch.
Yep.
No, it's the end of that plane, but it's the beginning of a new tale of survival of us learning our new environment.
And then eating other passengers, I think.
Stranded in the mountains, navigating wreckage, using shards of wing to hunt raccoons.
Mm-hmm. I've heard stories.
That's how it works.
But yeah, we're going to be at GDC. Seth's got a talk on Wednesday at 11 a.m. called Design by Chaos.
I'm pretty excited about it. Now I am.
Yeah. You've got a little sassier, you know? That's what you got to do.
Yeah, I realized my talk was boring.
It happens sometimes. You know?
Yeah.
So now it's not.
Good. And then my talk's on Thursday, and that's about marketing your game, trying to sell it. And there's a few other marketing talks that I'm going to be going to beforehand, so I might make some edits.
Last minute adjustments.
This is wrong.
Or just, delete stuff that other people already said.
Yeah, just be like, you guys saw this already. Who cares?
You guys already saw this.
So we will
maybe not.
There's two different talks. So, and then if you're in the area, then we'll just be around with our Butterscotch shirts on. That's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so high five us.
Mm-hmm.
And don't pull that thing where you high five us and then try to sell us something. That's not done. No, that's not cool.
Just damn ad companies.
Whatever you're selling, we're not buying.
Slippery. That's true.
Yeah, if you are an ad company, just keep walking. Because I don't want it. I don't want it.
Especially if you just are an ad company.
If you are a literal ad company,
they're people. Corporations are people. They might be wandering around.
That's true. There's probably some listening to this podcast right now.
You can't tell. You don't know. You don't know who's a corporation and who's a people because they're all people. Yep. So that's about all we have about GDC. And also, we have one more story before we get to questions. Mm-hmm. Questions.
Okay.
Something about a dog.
Okay. So my wife went up to Iowa this weekend, along with the other wives, to go hang out and relax a little bit while we prep for GDC. And that means I'm taking care of the dog, primarily. So Yogi and I have a great relationship.
The dog's name is Yogi.
Yeah. We hang out, do the belly scratching thing. He's all about it. He sleeps next to me.
This is him scratching your belly, I assume.
Yes, of course. I mean, yeah. He's a dog. I'm not going to scratch his belly.
That'd be demeaning.
But so yesterday, so Yogi needed to go out around 8 o'clock. So I take him out, and he's kind of a dick when he's outside, to be honest. Like inside, kind of an angel, but outside, for some reason, he just kind of flips, into this madness mode. And so Yogi goes, runs out down the steps, and I'm standing at the top of the deck. So there's just a couple of wooden stairs and then the backyard. And he always has to stay on the yard because there's a driveway. And then, of course, up the driveway is just the street.
Is certain death.
Probably death, probably other dogs. So he's usually very good about just staying up there even when he gets very excited. But I heard another dog barking, and it sounded like it was coming from the street. And usually my car's parked there, so he wouldn't be able to see anything. But it wasn't. And so immediately flashing through my mind was like, oh shit, Yogi's going to...
Doomsday scenario.
He's going to try to sprint and like murder a dog maybe, who knows. So I'm watching him and then he does his like little prancy pounce thing where he's like, I'm going to murder you. And he kind of leaps toward the edge of the yard. And I go full dog father mode and run down the stairs and then leap off the stairs in like a graceful arc onto the driveway because I'm like trying to intercept this dog.
And barrel rolled, I assume.
And... Yes, well, yeah. So I do some sick parkour.
Yeah,
sick,
probably one of those, Mission Impossible
yeah,
style.
Yeah, one of those cool things where you do a series of flips really fast.
Mm-hmm. For no
they
reason
They get faster
and
faster than you. They do one really high one where you do like three flips in a row. Like
land
in,
on the ground, like shockwaves. The yeah. And then Yogi is so taken aback by my speed that he just stops in his tracks and he's no longer barking. But the problem was that I had leapt off with such force off of the deck that I shattered the fucking stair banister on the deck. I just broke it in half because I used it as like a push-off point.
Okay, I was assuming because you did that move where you kind of like, you kind of crouch power. Down and then you explode up and it sends a shock.
Well, that's the thing. Right. Is afterward, I realized like this is what happens in your movies or anime situations.
Yeah,
right?
It's sort of a one-punch man.
Right, because when you leave a place, you leave a mark on it, yeah. You know? And then it was
by destroying
it with the force of your leap. So yeah. So yeah, I just karate chopped the... stair banister thing in half.
Nice.
And then Yogi was just standing there. And I was like, what is this for?
That's those dad reflexes people are always talking about.
I'm working on it.
But speaking of banisters, I've always wondered because it seems like banisters in houses are always, they're to keep you from dying, right? That's the purpose. And yet somehow they always seem to be the most shittily constructed part of an entire house.
Usually very wobbly.
Yeah.
And people get their heads stuck in them a lot.
And by people, you mean children.
Yes.
And adults who don't have enough butter available to lube up their
ears.
Well,
drunk adults. Drunk adults and children, which are the same thing.
Yes. That's very true.
Yeah. Behaviorally, right. Yes.
Yeah.
Size-wise, I think they both have equally sized heads.
That's true.
That's true.
Because children are just heads.
They're heads with tiny limbs poking out legs. The bottom.
Gross.
Children are disgusting, which, again, is why we don't want them listening to this podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Get out of here.
All right, so let's get on to some questions. These questions come from our listeners over at podcast.bscotch.net. So if you'd like to get your question onto a future episode, you can head on over there and slap it in the text box. First question comes from Chalosis. Hello, brothers.
Yeah.
Hey. So, do you all still have studio jam days every week? Our studio is doing a Thursday Mega Bug Crush inspired by y'all.
Mega Bug Crush, I like it.
And I wonder how that's going.
Yeah, well, so because we do the 4-day thing, work day,
yeah.
Work week, I mean. And the interesting thing I think about where we've gotten to now is everyone just kind of works however long they want, which like this week was a lot, basically. So yeah. Almost every day this week was very close to a full on jam day.
It was like a 9 to 7 or 9 to yeah, about.
Yeah. Yeah. So just, you know, in 4 days, you do like a full legit 40-hour work week easily. And then the other 3 days, you also put in some time in the case of running up to like GDC or some of these other things. So as far as we don't actually do a solid, like declared day anymore. It just is the case that sometimes, you know, Adam will come in and be like, hey, I got nothing going on tonight. Anybody else want to jam? Mm-hmm. And someone else will be like, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then now they're jamming.
Now it's jam day.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So it would do some weekends.
Yeah.
But not in a very defined, it's the same kind of a deal. Somebody would just say, I feel like we should jam this weekend. Mm-hmm. And then whoever can just jumps on board.
Right. Yeah. So maybe it'll be a Saturday. Maybe it'll be the whole weekend.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just a lot of it comes down to if somebody's really sort of banging their head against a specific problem. They're just like, I just need a day to just kill this thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so then they'll pick a day and just do a jam day on that thing.
Yeah. Yep. But I think otherwise we've really just tried to walk back all of our attempts at sort of clearly delineating, you know, a jam day versus a regular work day versus a non-work day versus whatever. We've kind of just removed all that stuff and gone back to working the way that we like to, which is we just work.
Mm-hmm.
And then if we need to go do something else, you just do that.
So, yeah. Well, the other nice thing, and the thing is, it really depends on your team composition, right? Because it's only possible to not have an actual structure in place for it and still have jam days if your whole team functions in the same way.
Yeah, and if everybody loves jam days.
Yeah. So nowadays it's very easy because all
which, of course, they do.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's true because they're great.
Everybody loves them.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we just, you know, randomly pick a day essentially sometimes and then go from there.
Yeah. And I will say it's been... The Thursday jam day was kind of fun and interesting because we did that for quite a while, you know, 6 months or so, I think.
Yeah. It worked pretty well, it seemed like.
Yeah, but it had an interesting consequence, which is that it caused a kind of a cascading structure to the whole work week so that our behavior on any given day was kind of reflective of the fact that Thursday was a jam day, you know, which I actually, it worked out fine. I mean, and that kind of a structure has its uses, but I think I prefer the style that we're back to right now, where just if you're working on a hard problem, you just want to keep doing it.
Yeah. Well, the problem with a structure is that if it doesn't have any adaptive qualities,
if it doesn't match the work you're doing,
exactly. Because sometimes, sometimes you actually have kind of an easier week, you know, where you're just like, built a bunch of levels, kind of did a bunch of art, but nothing, we got nothing going on.
Yeah.
So, you know, I did more. Making
good progress.
Yeah,
or maybe the flip side happens and on jam day, maybe you wake up and you just feel like shit.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. Mm-hmm. Right. So now, you know, but you want to come in because it is jam day. Right. You know, you want to participate.
And if you don't come in, now you've lost more than just a day. You've lost a jam
day. You've lost
a
jam day, which is a magic
a third
day,
of the week. You know?
Yeah.
So it also weirdly implies that no other days are jam days.
Yeah. I think that's the biggest problem.
Yeah. So I think by imposing structure on that, you do kind of, you put too much of a cap. Right.
But you need structure if you have a larger organization, is the thing.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you can't, it's very hard to sync up like, you know, 6 to 10 people's schedules arbitrarily.
Yeah.
Be like, oh yeah, Monday. Oh yeah, I'm going to jam today. Everybody else going to jam. Yeah. Like that never happens. You know, you can't, you don't have to, just too many cooks in the kitchen for that to be a thing.
Right. So it's difficult. Mm-hmm. So I guess it depends on how big your team is.
It really does.
And more than anything, it depends on who your people are. Because if people love jamming, then it doesn't matter. You can get away with a looser schedule where people can just work as they need to. And you can know that there hasn't been a day like since I can remember where I didn't put in 10 hours. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's just what my work day is. And so nobody on the team would begrudge me if I just like took a day and just said, you know, I just can't today.
I'm just going to not for a moment.
Yeah. Everybody else might be jamming that whole, because they might have all collectively decided, you know what, fuck it, I'm doing a jam day today. And I can just say,
this last week is a good example of that. Like we were on the march to get this damn thing on fire.
It was a fucking great work week.
Yeah. And so yesterday, was today, what day is today? Saturday.
Today's Saturday.
So it's like, you don't even know. But yeah. So yesterday, Friday, when I woke up, I got a bunch of work done by 11. Or actually by like noon or so. And then I had a few other things on my list, but like it took a long time to kind of get through them. And by about 5 o'clock, I was like, I am tired. And I've slept a full 8 hours. Like I've slept well every single night, but I'm just
kind of bumping up against the wall.
Yeah.
Well, this is kind of that effect of crunch, right?
Yeah.
Where So we, you know, we don't do crunch because we don't have deadlines. But every now and then we have events that do have a specific date, mm-hmm. like GDC, where we do need to get things finalized and prepared. Right. And so at that point, you know, that week leading up to it is usually pretty intense. So when I say we don't do crunch, the normal crunch method is months, if not more than that.
It's also working constantly.
Yeah.
Which is not quite.
And so we're still getting plenty of sleep. We're still leaving the office. Yeah. We're still going to the gym.
Hanging out with your family. All that stuff. Also,
yeah. So, you know, we don't do anything quite as crazy. So, all right. So next question comes from Anonymous. What sort of data structures do you guys use for level head collision checking? Do you use different structures depending on if the object is static or movable? Do you preload the level into RAM or do you read it off the hard drive as the player moves into different sections?
How much of this can we do without getting real?
Yeah, so I'm not gonna answer most of this because it's too technical for a podcast. But I do think it's worth noting that it's good to have multiple different styles of checking for things colliding depending on sort of whether they're moving or not.
Yeah, but also we should just step back and even just what does even any of this mean?
Yeah, so in a game, all of the interesting stuff happens when things bump into each other.
Just like in real life,
just
man.
Like in real life. So that's a collision.
What happens when two ideas collide? How do you
brainstorming?
Exactly. How do you resolve their positional conflicts?
Yeah. You know? So for example, you need to be able to stand on the ground. You need to be able to jump on an enemy or pick up a coin,
you know,
all that stuff.
Sometimes you're like maybe two people.
When two people love each other,
they collide. And you resolve that conflict with a child.
Yeah. One of them jumps on each other's head.
I think it's how it works.
First one turns, they kind of flash white for a moment, mm-hmm. and then they go, meep, and then they flip, and then they fly off screen.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's what happens.
Yep.
So it's very complicated, actually.
Yeah, it's one of those funny things. I've basically made by myself, I think, two games in my life. And by myself, I mean with guidance from Seth. Mm-hmm. And I still remember that he had warned me ahead of time both times. It's going to be surprisingly difficult just to get a thing
to stand on the ground.
Mm-hmm. And, which of course, you know, I've programmed enough that I'm thinking through how that would work and I believe, but even still, when I went to go do it, Jesus, that it was so crazy.
Yeah. It's that's silly. Those things you really take for granted.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was even, for me, instead of tackling all these technical things, I'll just talk about one very interesting, problem that I solved recently in Level Head, which was the problem of bumping your head on things.
Mm-hmm. Well, so we should back up because most of what makes a game fun, especially a platformer, is actually the game doing not what it should actually do based on, you know, where the object's located, but what you as a player think that it should have done.
Yes.
Which means that if you try to jump upward through like a narrow passageway,
and you should like, just be able to do
and
that.
And you're close enough, you feel like, I should just get through there. Like, just let me go.
Yeah. Now, problem
and
is,
the game will let you do
yeah,
it.
Problem is, if you are a perfect square, and the passageway is a perfect square.
Your corners
that
are
is
caught.
Exactly your size.
Yeah.
Then you need to be a fucking surgical sniper mm-hmm. to be able to jump through that gap.
That is someone who shoots constructively
scalpels.
The organs off of people's body.
I yeah. Think.
With scalpel.
Yeah. Like
with a scalpel appendix. Gun.
Mm-hmm. So yep. If somebody's appendix is bursting, you're 300 yards away. You can't get there in time.
The wind's blowing from the east.
So you just shoot it knots. Right out of their body.
Yep. Yeah. So you put a scalpel into your
just
surgery gun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so for example, in Level Head, when you are jumping upwards, when you're checking for whether you're going to be bumping your head on something, that check is only like 3 pixels wide.
It's just
even
like,
though
it's like the very topmost dome of your cranium.
Yeah, yeah. Even though your character is actually about 70 pixels wide. And then if you jump up, and you end up sort of inside of the wall, then we just kind of gently push you out of the wall mm-hmm. while you do that, right? And so you'll see this, and there's all these kinds of, I call them forgiveness mechanics. I don't know if they actually have a
They're
a
really name. Just lies.
They're just lies. So it's also stuff like when you're running and you need to jump off of a ledge, logically, you would say the person can only jump when they're on the ground mm-hmm. because that's how the world works, right? Problem is people's reaction time is about a tenth of a second.
Mm-hmm.
And people will hit the button a tenth of a second after their feet leave the edge of the cliff.
And then they'll be like, this game isn't responsive.
Yep. Right. And it's like, no, they're like, no, it's perfectly responsive. That's the problem.
Yeah.
So instead, the game needs to sort of give you a 0.1 second grace period where even though you're floating over the void, you can still jump.
It's a Wile E. Coyote style, like mm-hmm. cartoons, you know?
And the same thing for if you're falling, people will hit the jump button a tenth of a second before they touch the ground. And then they'll be like, what the fuck? I pushed the jump button and I didn't jump. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, because you weren't on the ground, right? So instead, you have to forecast where they're going to be. And when they hit the jump button, you got to say, would they have hit the ground
in a
very brief time span? And if so, then just let them do it, mm-hmm. right? So there's all these kinds of dumb things that you have to do to get the game right. actually to be fun and playable. And it goes way beyond just saying jump when you're on the ground.
Mm-hmm. So as far as these collision structures go, then you use a big, there's a suite of them.
Yeah, there's a whole, basically, yeah, the player, all these different things collide in a bunch of different ways depending on what they are, whether they're moving.
Whether they're solid from one direction and not solid from the other.
Yeah, that's the interesting one, is just that whole being able to
jump up through a platform and land on it.
Yeah, yep. And there are no tutorials out there that actually do this in a satisfactory way. Mm-hmm. Usually what they'll do is they'll just say, if the player's below a platform, that platform is not solid. And if the player's above that platform, it becomes solid. That's fine as long as you want literally nothing else to interact with that platform.
So what if an enemy walks on a platform that's above you?
Yeah.
Yep.
Exactly. Now it's going to fall on top of
you. So what that really means is that for every single thing that can move, some things are solid for that thing and some things are not solid mm-hmm. for that thing, right? Yep. So everything has its own perspective about how the world works.
Just like life.
Just like life.
Yeah.
So I guess long story short.
Like a good technical blog post article at some point.
More like a book.
Yeah,
because honestly, I've had to solve all these fucking problems by myself because every tutorial I see out there does absolutely nothing to answer these questions. They just barely touch on making it look like what something like Mario would do or whatever. Mm. But then when you actually try to put it into real world use cases for like, oh, I want an enemy to run on this platform. Well, you're below the platform, so now it's not solid. Mm. Now the enemy falls on your head, right? So none of these questions are answered anywhere online. I may be wrong, but I haven't found it.
Cool.
So I'll write a book.
Might just be hard. Maybe the answers have bad search engine optimization.
Could be.
Sad fact.
Or maybe my questions are bad.
Well, that is the thing with technical questions or these kinds of questions where you're trying to describe a thing you want to accomplish. Mm-hmm. Being able to search for those is sometimes basically, there's something I discovered with Amazon Web Services, which is our hosting cloud provider for all of our web stuff. Is they have so many services. It is outrageous how many services they have. And they're really complicated because you can do just so many things. So their documentation, there's a lot of it, like stupid amount mm-hmm. of it. It's like encyclopedia.
It's like a book.
It's like a series of books, right? And so now let's say you want to know like, okay, how do I do this very specific thing that I've never done before? I don't know the terminology for it. I just know what I'm trying to accomplish. Mm. Now you got to compose a search term that doesn't use any of the words that would be required to find the answer because you don't know the answer.
You don't know them.
Yeah. You can't find what you're looking for.
But it is there.
Now, if there was a book out there called How to Program a Platformer,
mm-hmm.
and it just answered all these questions, so which does bring me to an interesting point.
That's a problem, though, because that book is the same as the documentation. So if you're trying to look for a particular aspect of how to make a platformer, you got to read the whole book first. Because you don't know how to search for it.
That's just book sales.
But it will have chapters that you might be able to.
No, but that's what I'm saying. Because this is also how like AWS documentation works, right? It's like, I know where in the giant thing roughly my thing should be, you know? And I can go in there and I can dig for it. But it's really hard to find anything. And I'm sure as hell not going to read the entire documentation to find the one answer to a question that I have.
So it's kind of like digging in a junk pile.
That's exactly what
you
it's
don't
like.
Know what you're looking for.
Yeah, so you can't
find it. And you can't find it.
Yep.
Which is all to say,
my bet is that little bits and pieces of the problems that you're solving have probably been talked about a little bit by somebody somewhere. But it's this intersection of that person being able to write it well enough that you can understand it, that the problem being similar enough that their solution also applies to your thing, and that you can find it in the first place using the search terms that you used to search for it.
So by all accounts,
that's a tiny,
it might as well not exist.
It might as well not exist. Exactly.
So
I guess you better write this book.
I guess I got to write a book now. God damn it. All right. Next question comes from Woland 77. What is a big gaming related misconception which you have had disabused? How did that realization change your work? What does disabused mean? Does that mean not abused?
Removed?
I'm assuming removed in context.
In the context.
That's an infrequently seen word.
I think for me, so we had this understanding of, we came to this understanding of how games work via loop systems. And Seth has a whole talk about this, which on our YouTube channel, called Loops and Rockets, which is just sort of taking all these design principles that we use in-house and pulling them out for everybody to see. Now, the thing that I find interesting is that shortly after we came across that idea, we largely, most of our jam games and stuff were extremely loop heavy. And then I played something like Super Meat Boy or just some other game.
And by loop, you mean you do a thing that gives you some sort of a reward in effect.
Yeah. So essentially it's akin to, you know, you kill a monster, the monster drops a better weapon, which allows you to kill a new monster. And then you're on this loop.
That's a power loop.
Yeah. And you're stuck there. So in the case of other games, there are some games that actually mechanically, the mechanic itself is just so fun to play with as just a toy that it doesn't require any loops whatsoever.
Well, that is a skill loop, which I do address in my talk. Well,
moderately. I mean things like Gang Beasts, right?
Yes.
So there's barely skill involved because you can only kind of get better at that game. And it's just really fun to go sort of knock around in. And there are other games that are either so pretty or that are so juicy, like the way they handle just sort of the overall gameplay.
Or just have so much personality.
Yes, or have so much sass to them. We're talking about the Behena's game, Pit People, last week. So there's plenty of games that they have this entire extra element that makes it so the need to actually have those loops in place or to have them be extremely strong is either dampened or completely removed. And so I think part of it, as far as this game design journey goes, is just recognizing the different elements that we could bring in to our games. And then anytime we choose not to bring one of those in, so narrative, for example, or juice, or whatever else, that we are definitely leaving an aspect of the whole thing on the table. Like we're just saying, you know, we're not going to do that. And sometimes it heightens the other things by not having it. And sometimes it actually is just something that ends up on the cutting room floor because of time constraints or whatever else.
So I've landed kind of I was going to talk about loops as well, mm-hmm. but from a different angle, which is I still believe that a lot of the games that you talk about as being compelling but not having loops are games that I've picked up and then put down shortly after.
Mm-hmm.
Largely because I had no reason to come back, right? So something like Gang Beasts, like it's fun in the moment, but I also don't care about it. it's more like a party game, right? Mm-hmm. So same thing like maybe Jack in the Box.
Right.
Jack in the Box. Jack Box.
Jack Box.
Jack Box. Jack in the Box is a fast food restaurant.
It is a fast food restaurant. Yes.
Yeah, which actually has negative loops.
It'd be awesome if it did have loops.
The more you eat, the shittier you feel.
If you had to come through the drive-thru like 10 times before you could get like a double, you know, cheeseburger.
Which they do with punch cards and
they
stuff.
They do that. Yeah. But the problem is it doesn't feed back in on itself, right? So
true.
So if I get a double punch card and then a triple punch card, mm-hmm. I can't get a three times the size sandwich, you know what I mean?
Which would be amazing.
That would count for three punches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't get to unlock access to Epic Sandwiches at Subway.
Sounds like a business model.
Sounds like it.
That's what we would call gamification of the fast food industry.
That's right. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so
casual game.
I mean, my realization of my big thing was I thought that games were magical and that each one was very unique.
Mm.
But the more time I spend studying them, the more I realize they all are just different expressions of the same fundamental concept, mm-hmm. right?
Well, I mean, they're in the same way that stories are.
Exactly, yeah. And I mean, once you read, if you ever go to the website TV Tropes, just go there and just surf it. Just browse around and you'll realize, oh my God, nothing is unique. Like everything mm-hmm. is just an expression of these same core idea is just kind of rearranged and mixed up. I mean, and like I was thinking about when an Infinity War comes out, Avengers Infinity War. I was like, oh, it'd be so cool to just watch all the Marvel movies, like watch them all back to back. I think there's 18 or 19 of them, you know.
Yeah, so you have to like, there might even be 20.
You would need like a 3-day weekend to watch through all these movies because they're 2 to 3 hours long.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you want to do it, I could. Maybe
we could do it.
That.
But,
I would be down.
But awesome. I realized that's just watching the same movie over and over again.
But here's the thing, that doesn't make it any worse.
Well, no, I'm not saying it's bad or good.
Yeah.
It's just what it is. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that I think I held games in just a different regard before I started working on them. And the more I got down to the nuts and bolts, the more I'm like, nah.
Nuts and bolts.
Yeah. And not only that, but like once you understand what that is, then the challenge. And it's something we always talk about is that making games is the easiest part of being a game developer. Because once you really get those fundamentals, then you can make a game about being an elevator.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
which
still,
we've done.
It's still fun, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
So the challenge of making a fun game just kind of goes away once you get yeah. that. So that's about it for me.
Yeah. What about you, Adam?
I can't even think of any.
Adam is, he's
what about web tech? Just
he's so skeptical of his own ideas that he's never even had conceptions, let alone misconceptions. You know what I mean?
That is, well, yeah, but it's actually that I don't add any weight to my conception so that when they are identified as a misconception,
it's not a noteworthy event.
Huh, and then I move on with my life.
What about the website of things? Same question, but with the
website.
Web. So what things did you think were happening on the web that now that you've sort
the
of
web,
gotten
so the there? Web, actually, the more I've learned about how the web works and how to deploy and make, you know, web technology, I actually fucking love it. I hated it when I started because I started with, you know, PHP and MySQL, the kind of the core components of the internet, which are just not fun. They're just not fun to program in. And the problems that I was solving also weren't fun because I didn't know enough to solve fun, interesting problems yet. I was trying to just kind of get stuff working. And so when I started web programming, I did it because we needed it. And I didn't like it. I just felt like it felt like this very loosey-goosey, kind of in the same way that science sees biology, because, you know, that's what my PhD is in, right? It's seen as a soft science, right? In the sense that
all those little bacteria and stuff, well, squishy.
In the sense that, unlike physics, where you just you know, you put some symbols down and then that's how the world works. Right?
I did physics.
Yeah, exactly. Which is different from biology, where you're doing, and we call it, you know, we call it bench work. We call it wet, you know, wet work.
Wet lab.
Well, not wet work, because I guess it's murder, but, you know.
But it's a murder. Yeah.
So, but
I mean, there is a lot of murder in biology. Experience.
There is a lot. I have murdered many creatures in my day.
That's true.
Yeah, mostly yeast, though, so it's fine.
lots of yeast.
Probably not fine to them.
Lots and lots of yeast.
Just another worker situation, Adam.
But this kind of idea of, like, there's like hard science and then there's soft science. I kind of carried that same model in my mind from programming, because I was, you know, I was doing programming for science. So I was doing all these, you know, big data analysis things and constructing pipelines that would make microscopes behave robotically to collect all my data and then be, you know, automatically piped through some processing. All the statistics is being done too. It's just all this stuff that, to me, taught me that biology, there's nothing about biology that makes it a soft science, you know, soft, right? Mm-hmm. The way that people describe it. And there's actually a whole bunch of really interesting, very, very analytical, complicated meat there that puts it right into the domain of something like physics.
Mm-hmm.
But despite kind of learning that as I went, I kind of came into web development and saw it the same way. Because, you know, people actually, a lot programmers often will look down on web development as kind of like this. It's the thing that people just play with, you know, and it's, you can get away with a lot because of the programming languages you use. Because browsers process HTML, or the language of a document, really sloppily on purpose because they know people are going to fuck it up.
Right.
Right. It's this very democratized, like, everybody can go throw their hat in the ring kind of a thing.
Yeah. Programmers with a capital P can be very...
They have strong opinions about things.
Snobbish.
Well, it's just that the more sloppy a thing is allowed to be, then the more it's looked down upon as like this kind of soft...
Same thing with Game Maker.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so when I came in, I had some of those ideas in my brain because I've been trying to learn computer science, you know, by being around computer scientists and people who studied that kind of stuff in that way. And they had very strong opinions about these things. And so I carried those with me to web development. And while I was doing, especially the first year and a half of it, when I developed Bscotch ID, again, all with PHP and MySQL, and I was just like raw hand coding everything because I didn't know enough to do it any other way. And it felt like that. It felt soft and sloppy and just bad, right?
But that's because of you.
But that was my problem, exactly. I was soft, sloppy, and bad in the same way that you can be that in any other discipline. But that doesn't mean that the discipline itself is soft, sloppy, and bad.
It just means it has some wiggle room.
Yeah,
so it lets
exactly.
You ease into it.
Right. And people, and again, I read all these disparaging things about JavaScript in particular, because...
What a weird thing to disparage.
Right?
Just back up.
Almost everything is a weird thing to disparage.
It is, yeah. But if you ever are on Reddit, you know, God help you, if you're ever on Reddit and you're looking at like the r/programming subreddit, if you ever see JavaScript mentioned, it's only disparagingly. And it's kind of a joke. It's kind of, everybody treats it as this kind of joke language.
Well, of note, if you're ever on any subreddit...
You should get off.
And you've made a mistake.
That's right. That's right. But
your life has taken a wrong turn somewhere.
That's true. But the point being that that sort of all of these things that I was doing were seen as these soft things, and I saw them as these soft things. But then after just truly digging into it and embracing them for what they were, you know, so specifically looking for resources and books and people who talked about using things to do the things that they're good at, that they were designed for, and also explaining just how they work, revealed that basically, no, like these things are very cleverly designed. The reason that they do things the way they do, you know, there's some weird legacy bullshit, of course, too, right? But for the most part, they do things in a very clever, well-designed way done by very smart people. And so if you're using JavaScript the way it was meant to be used, it's fucking amazing. There's nothing I have more fun with than programming in JavaScript on my day-to-day, despite the fact that this is the language everybody looks down upon and disparages, right? It's super fun when you embrace it for what it is supposed to be, what it was designed for. So I went from seeing this discipline of web development as this like sloppy, convoluted thing because of the technology stack, because you have to know 10 different languages to do anything. And now I see it as this incredibly robust, very technical, sort of ecosystem of things. It's just different than I thought programming was. But not in a way that makes it like soft or
inferior,
or somehow inferior. It's just a different kind of thing and I didn't really think that programming was like this, with all this really asynchronous stuff where you mostly don't get to trust things anymore. You know, basically the programming that I sort of trained myself in was the stuff where you got a pipeline, you pass data through it.
And if things don't work, you pass the data through.
And you pass the data through.
So you know what's coming in.
Right. You know what's coming in. You know what's coming out. If something is broken, that's definitely your fault because you coded something wrong. Versus web programming, where if something's broken, that could be a lot of stuff.
Somebody hacked it. Somebody sent a semicolon and you forgot to clean it out.
Just anything could happen. So it has this kind of cool, fun, Wild West vibe. It's got, I don't know, it ended up being kind of everything that I could want without knowing that that's what I was getting myself into.
I will also say that I postponed my game development career for years because I was listening to programmers.
Yeah.
With a capital P, right? Yeah, I took computer science, got a D in it. Everything about programming in general seemed incredibly opaque and very hard to understand. And I literally just gave up. Yeah. Then I got GameMaker and I was like, oh, wait, this is actually not that hard.
Yeah.
You just need to put the time in. So,
yeah. Well, and you can get, I mean, and,
Because all these programmers kept telling me if I want to make games, I need to use C++.
Right.
Which is the worst fucking advice.
Speaking from the art side of things, like every class I took, they're like, all right, you're going to need this sheet of paper. You need these 12 different pencils. Mm-hmm. You're going to need all this stuff to do this. And then if you don't do it in this very particular way, then you did it wrong.
Yep. Right.
Same thing.
Right.
Every single discipline.
You
has
need
it.
The tools. No, you don't. You need a pencil.
You give me the bare bones and then we'll work our way up.
Or a pen and an arm.
Because I don't even know why I would want to shade something. I don't know why I want to shade anything right now.
Who cares?
What
lights?
If you did it?
Who gives a shit?
Just put some shadows on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I want to hit two really quick questions and then maybe one final one. Next question comes from Menelous. Guys, what are your favorite refreshing adult beverages? RABs. I love Belgian style triples myself. Cheers to you guys.
What do you think, Adam?
For beer, I like really dark, just dark, dark stuff. So if you give me a stout or a porter, then I'm going to be happy almost always.
I'm on that train as well.
Yep. And when it comes to cocktail-like beverages, I like whiskey drinks with, I always forget the name of it. There's this herbal liqueur that is just my favorite thing in the universe, but I can never remember the name of it.
It must be really good because every time you drink it, you forget everything.
Yeah, what is it called?
Sam?
Moscow Mules.
Moscow Mules.
I'm a fan of just plain old straight just whiskey in a cup.
Mm-hmm.
And people say, what's your favorite? That is my favorite.
Whiskey in a cup.
Yeah. Anytime I go to a bar, I'll be like, I need whiskey. They're like, which one? I'm like, just fucking put it in there. Just put something in the cup, then I drank
it. I think it is true that if you are a bartender and somebody comes up and they don't specify, if they just say, I just want some whiskey, you probably don't need to ask. You probably shouldn't ask. You should just grab some mid-shelf whiskey, pour it in a glass, call it a day. Because the reason that person just said, I want some whiskey, is because they don't give a fuck.
They don't give a fuck and neither should you.
Yeah. If they gave a fuck, they would specify. They would ask, what whiskeys do you have?
I will also say, as far as other adult beverages, that matcha that we had in Uruguay.
Yeah. Children should not drink that.
My God, they'll get wired. That I would highly recommend. It's just it's a fun thing to drink. The act of drinking it is weird and fun.
Mm-hmm. There's a ritual involved. Mm-hmm. So it's matcha. Then, how do you spell that?
M-A-T-C-H-A.
Yeah.
I think you can go get it at
the
store.
The green stuff.
Mm-hmm. You can get your paraphernalia.
It's also a great flavoring in all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Baked goods, ice cream, you know.
That's if you want to get hyped up.
Yeah. Get on that matcha train. Next quick question comes from The Rumpus, who said,
"What?
Where do you guys get your sound effects for your commercial games? I know in the Shenana Jam document you said to use royalty-free ones, but do you do the same for your paid games? If not, where's a place you can get some sassy sound effects?"
Where do we get them?
So we use a program called BFXR to generate all of our 8-bit stuff.
Because who cares if you're making a jam game?
Yeah, whatever. So we actually ended up, one day I just sat down with BFXR and I just created a bunch of different sounds. So I was like, I'm going to make like 3 different laser sounds and 3 different impact sounds and whatever. And I just kind of went down a list of things that I thought we would need a lot of.
Basically a placeholder library.
Yeah. And so we just bring those 40 or whatever sounds with us everywhere. I'm just like, oh, like a little coin sound. Oh, a little clicking noise, you know, a gun sound. And like, these are just like kinds of weird, like they're 8-bit crunchy nonsense sounds. But the great thing about 8-bit sounds is you can reuse the same sound for lots of different things because they don't sound like anything.
Right.
Right. As soon as you do a real sound, like, oh, this is like an axe hitting an animal, right? Then that's a very different sound than like chopping a rock
also
with a pickaxe.
Also a very gross sound.
Yeah. It's a very sort of wet, it's a wet science.
It's a wet work.
It's wet work is really what it is.
Yeah. So otherwise, we contract Fat Bard for our big commercial stuff, and then he manifests sounds from the ether.
I believe once he yelled into a paper towel tube.
Yeah, so the sound of the glazer and Crashlands, yeah, is him holding a paper towel tube up to his face and squealing through it.
Yep.
So we let that happen off camera.
Somewhere else.
Somewhere far away in a soundproof padded room.
Mm-hmm.
That's that.
What's the last one? I'm ready.
Okay. The last question is just a pretty generic one, which is just, what are some difficulties you guys encountered when you started up the company? How did you get to be as successful as you are now?
Wait, so we're already over time and you wanted to hit that one last?
I think we can just...
Yeah, we can just do it.
Just do it.
I've got no problem with it.
I mean, it's a Saturday.
we got nowhere to go.
We got nowhere to be except GDC.
Yeah.
I mean, aside from the cancer.
Well,
that was a big difficulty.
We should also say that the entire history of this podcast is the answer to this question.
That's
so
true.
So if you got 140 hours
to get an in-depth answer, listen to the whole thing.
That's true.
That's where you'll get your answer.
Yeah, I think, some of the bigger ones, well, obviously the cancer one, but I'm just going to not worry about that.
We got lots of documentation on that one, including a documentary.
Yep, don't worry about that one. I think as far as the business stuff goes, it was launching enough stuff to have an understanding of the market fast enough that we didn't run out of money. In other words, that we could learn fast enough to recognize where we had completely screwed everything up early enough.
But we did plan for that.
We did plan for it,
which is good.
But we barely made it.
It was down to the wire
in every single context up until
and we got lucky a couple times.
Yeah. So
no, we got lucky every time.
Every time.
Well, there's always.
We also got unlucky many times.
Yeah. So stuff like our first launch with Talfight. We did not
totally bomb.
Yeah, we didn't tell the platforms about it.
And we also fucked up our Quadrupus launch where we didn't get an iTunes feature with it because
we launched early on Google Play.
Yep.
Not because we needed to, but because we had said so. We had like 12 fans at the time.
We potentially cut our revenue by, I don't know, it's hard, immeasurable amounts.
Some horrible number.
You know.
Which would have helped a lot during all the cancer stuff.
Because it was the thing paying for everything.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So there's so many things. I think the big one at sort of the heart of it was not asking enough questions early on, I think, about
well,
how...
Well, I don't think we could have.
I don't think we could have, but like...
It's just hard. It's just hard at the beginning.
It's the searching for junk thing.
Like, you don't know what you're looking for.
You don't know what you're looking for.
You got to fuck it up first.
That's basically it.
Yep. Yeah. And so that means you just need to give yourself enough time and continue to do things. And I think this is an important note is a lot of people ask questions about motivation.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're in a position where you're asking questions about motivation, you have taken a wrong fucking turn somewhere because you shouldn't be If you're dedicating your life to something, you shouldn't be getting out of bed being like, but I don't wanna. Like, what the fuck is that, right?
Yeah.
So if that's the kind of problem that you're running into, then you need to reevaluate a lot of things.
Yeah, or pick a better frame.
The problems that you're running into should be external problems that are imposed upon you by...
Like, how do I do this better?
Right.
How do I make people give a shit that I'm doing this?
Mm-hmm. Right. So that's, I think, an important thing to ponder. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. And otherwise, it was just kind of getting noticed, right?
So, yeah.
That was the early stuff. I think... I came in a year and a half in, so that was after Tau Phi and Quadrant Plus. Mm-hmm. And so I joined at that point where a lot of those problems had already been, those hurdles had been gotten over. Thanks for nothing, Adam. So when I came in, we were trying to figure out how do we make Crashlane successful, right? Mm-hmm. But more than that, I think, so it's kind of starting then, because when I came in, that gave a little bit of breathing room to the studio, because we could stop back and think about things more often. And also, I never hold back a question. And so I forced a lot of just discussions about having to think about what we were doing. Mm-hmm. And so kind of starting for me, definitely, obviously, because that's when I joined. So starting then, and then especially post Crashlane's launch, the real big question and that I think of as a difficulty was figuring out, what are we doing?
Yeah.
You know, like what's the end goal? What's the point of all this? Should we have an end goal? What's coming next? Because we were
kind of trying to just keep our heads above water.
Yeah. Which for so long that this question of just what comes next, we chipped away at, but never made a decision on. We didn't know.
You just don't need to.
You don't need to. But then post Crashlane's, all of a sudden we, again, breathing room, you know? So this question became much more important. And we started to make decisions about what we thought we wanted to do, what we thought we needed to be. And these were based off of kind of what we saw around us, you know? Mm-hmm. So we were kind of emulating other successful studios, you know, trying to figure out what it means to grow, what it means to build a culture for a studio, what it means to be a studio who has had a successful game and now needs to make another one, you know?
Right.
And to me, that was actually where all the things that I consider real difficulties came from.
After the Crashlane launch,
was just trying to figure out what to do. And I think, which is, I guess, clear for our regular podcast listeners, we were meandering, you know, for basically a 2 years.
Well, it's part of it comes from that problem of, okay, we've made it. Now let's change everything.
Yeah.
Right.
Cause we felt like we should.
Right? It's not even feeling like you should. I feel like it's that you make it up to that point by doing things a particular way.
Yeah.
That is caused by the constraints that you're operating under.
Right.
And then once those constraints lift, then you're like, oh, those constraints were causing problems for us. So we're going to operate without them now.
Some of them were for sure.
But in reality, most of them actually were the thing that allowed you to get sort of hold on the ground and then operate.
The fact that we were almost out of money was the reason that we got the games out as fast as we did. And also that was the reason that that the work was done as quickly as possible with minimal effort to try to like plan everything ahead of time. And if something wasn't quite the way we wanted it, then as long as it would still work, then we kept it, you know, because we had to get stuff out.
And I remember, I mean, last year we were working on a game called Whippersnappers, which we never really disclosed the name, which then sort of became, we migrated most of that code base and everything over into Scuffle Buddies. But we ended up scrapping that project because we did pre-production. So we did pre-production, which we've never done before. And we're like, this is what studios do, right? Yep. We're real.
We've got more people now. The project scope is bigger. So we have to do this.
We have to do pre-production, which is this asinine part of game development where you do nothing for a long time and just think about what might become. You know, you forecast and you think, here's what I think the game's going to play like. Here's what I think it's going to look like. Here's what I hope to achieve. Here's what the systems will do. Mm-hmm. And then you're wrong.
Yeah, you're always wrong.
Because you can't know.
Yep.
Right. Mm-hmm. especially if you are going into pre-production because you want to make something beyond what you've ever done before, which means you're just making shit up.
Well, your part of design document, when we did the math on it after, like, we did a pre-production run and then we were working on what the systems that we had come up with. And it was essentially came down to every minute of pre-production that we did was equivalent to 27 times that in programming, just in programming.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if somebody goes, what if we did this? Like that sentence.
Boom, 27 extra.
That's, yeah.
So it was a sort of thing.
It's going to take an hour to make.
Yeah, a one-hour discussion about some particular system or something like that we weren't even at yet in terms of where we needed to be building.
Yeah, but and when you hear about studios that crunch, it's like, well, no shit. I mean, you have two years. You have 2 years devoted to making this game. So you spent the first 6 months coming up with ideas, which are now going to take years to implement. Yeah. Then you have to crunch to do it, and you've lost 6 months because you spent 6 months doing pre-production. Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, none of it makes any sense.
Yeah. So I think, I mean, this is what this year's been largely about, and I think part of the reason why all of us kind of feel like we're back on track and like we're got a good target for success now with Levelhead and then with Scuffle Buddies with the return of that later in the year. You know, there's a Crashlands update coming out, first one in like a year and a half. So I think a lot of it's been realizing that the way that we were doing things that worked was just fine.
Yeah.
And in fact, was optimal for us. And it might not be for everybody else. And that's the weird thing about having the podcast.
Yeah. And I would say we aren't doing things the same way we were doing back then.
We're doing them better.
We're doing them better, but it's the same motivation. You know, it's the same kind of core ideas.
Yeah. So, I mean, for Levelhead, the game's 11 weeks old. It's ready to show at GDC.
Yeah, it looks good.
Like, dude, it's looking good. It's feeling great. There's a couple weird bugs and quirks and stuff.
In fact, we had this problem because this is the same problem we used to have, which was we can make the game so fast that the question of when to talk to press about it is really weird.
Because by the time we're ready to talk to press, the game's done. Mm-hmm. And then now what?
And there was, for example, there
what
was
if it's
this...
not done? We can't forecast what's going
to
happen.
Exactly.
Right. Which we did try to do again. Like,
didn't work.
Scuffle Buddies were maybe we can just tease stuff. Yeah. And so we put out the fucking cinema graph. And people were like, what is this?
I was like, I don't care about this. Show me the game.
Yeah. Right, we can't show you the game because it's going to be completely different later.
Yeah. So and there was this competition that we wanted to submit to for. It's at GDC called Indie Showdown, which was actually what Crashlands got second place in a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to come back and submit Levelhead to it. And by the time the submission deadline, I think it was the 28th of February. And at the time, the game did not look good. And we sent them a note.
It was nothing like what it is now. Yeah, it's only been a couple weeks.
Yeah, we're like, we really want to submit, but we're not going to be able to make it. And it's going to look really good by the time we get to GDC, but not a minute before.
Right. I mean, like today we're wrapping up just the handful of things to finalize it.
And so, and that kind of sucks, right? Because like the timing is just bad and you can go submit to these awards or whatever else, or like, you know, potentially win money in that particular case, but we're not able to take advantage of that. And then when it comes to talking to press, it's like, if we wait a week, we always know that if we wait a week, it will be massively better.
Yep.
Which is a weird position to be in if you want to start talking about a thing, because it's like, you always feel like
you should always wait a week.
Exactly. So, but, you know, that's the same problem we used to have, and that's a fine problem to have. Who cares?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just our problem.
At least we're making stuff worth talking about. Mm-hmm. So that's what we should be focusing on.
Yeah, well, but otherwise, it's all been about putting the soul back into stuff, you know?
It's easy to lose your way.
It is, and I think we were trying to become a company first, mm-hmm. you know, and then the team and who we are and all that stuff second, and that's just ass backwards. So now that we flip that around, now we still try to make sure that things are polished and things are really good. In fact, it's actually easier now because you can focus on, do we like it more mm-hmm. so than will other people like it? Because as long as we do, it's going to be fine, you know.
Yeah, at least someone out there might agree.
Yeah. Well, and people will always hate anything. You know, we were just talking with Shure about this, right? Because he's getting ready to launch this new patch.
And this will be his first designs, essentially.
Yeah.
Go live in the wild.
Yeah. And so of course, now he has to contend with the fact that for the first time, he's going to put out something to the world that he is largely responsible for. And that
people will hate.
And that people will hate. And he was,
not,
and he
I
was
mean,
trying
obviously
to,
not all of them.
No, no.
But people hate everything.
They hate everything.
So.
And he was trying to, he was just trying to work through every possible thing he could do to make sure that everybody loved it. And, you know, and we had to have a discussion and just say, you know, no, that's not the goal. The goal is not to have, this is not for everybody. This mm-hmm. is for the kinds of people who like the kinds of stuff that we make, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And there just are people who are going to hate what you do, no matter what you do.
Yep.
And now we decided to be okay with that.
It's fine.
It's fine.
That's just the nature of the earth.
Yeah. I'm not worried about those people.
Nah. Yeah.
This thing.
So, I mean, they're going to be annoying because they're going to tell us that they hate us, but
just mute them on Twitter. It's great.
Yeah, just ignore them.
Don't block them though. Mute them. Otherwise they'll know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's an important tactical move.
Yeah, I think the thing to always remember when you mute somebody is just imagine that they're a toddler. Your hand is on their head and they're swinging punches.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
That's basically what's happening.
Yeah.
All right, so that's all the time we have. We gave you guys a little extra, like a little 13-minute
GDC bonus.
13-minute bonus boost shot. Mm-hmm. Shot of podcast pudding.
Yeah. That is going to cost you $1 in in-game currency, though.
Yep.
It is. We're going to take your loot boxes back.
Yep.
That we gave you. All right, so we'd like to thank our producer, Fat Barb, for making us sound good. Thanks to our community moderators who keep our Discord and forums running. We still have forums, right? That's a thing.
Uh-huh. I went there a few days ago.
Nice.
Cool.
Yep.
I went there a few years ago. If you'd like to get more involved in the Butterscotch community, you can hop into our Discord server at discord.gg/bscotch and come say hey. That's where we really are. Also, if you'd like to adorn your body with Butterscotch merch, you can check out our shop, which is over at shop.bscotch.net. We got t-shirts, mugs, stickers, hoverboards.
No, we don't have them.
We don't, but...
But it'd be cool, though.
Yeah, but it's called a bait and switch. You lure them in with the hoverboard, and they accidentally buy a mug. Mm. You got them. Boom.
Yep.
Also, if you'd like to send us something, we have a mailbox, so you can send us a letter or a candy piece or whatever. And that's over at mailbox.bscotch.net. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.